What happens when a story too painful to tell becomes the story everyone needs to hear? In 1982, a novel arrived that would shatter literary conventions, spark national debates, and transform American culture. The Color Purple wasn't just a book. It became a phenomenon that would win the Pulitzer Prize, gross over $100 million as a film, revolutionize Broadway demographics, and give Oprah Winfrey the role that would define her life's mission. Yet behind this cultural juggernaut lies a quieter, more intimate story, a writer determined to give voice to her step-grandmother Rachel, a woman who endured decades of abuse in silence. What Alice Walker created from that family pain would challenge how we talk about trauma, representation, and the power of Black women's voices in America. Rachel Walker married as a teenager to a man who loved someone else. Her new husband, Henry Clay, had been prevented from marrying Estella Perry, the woman he called Shug, and instead married Kate Nelson. After Kate was murdered in front of her young son, Willie Lee, Henry quickly married the teenage Rachel. Willie Lee never accepted his stepmother, and Rachel spent her life trapped in drudgery and violence, with virtually no voice of her own. "I don't know what she thought in those days, and months, and years when she was silent," Walker reflected decades later. That unknowing haunted her. How do you recover a life that was never recorded? How do you honor someone whose thoughts were never considered worth preserving? Walker's answer was radical. Reimagine her grandmother's fate entirely. Give Rachel the voice, love, and liberation real life denied her. This wasn't creative license. It was historical correction, ancestral healing. Celie would speak truths generations of Black women had been forced to swallow. Walker insists Celie was never actually ugly. In her poem questioning this assumption, she argues any perceived ugliness comes from those determined to degrade her, from years of being told she was worthless. When readers believe the stepfather's lies, they participate in the same violence. Shown a photograph of her grandmother Rachel, Walker confirmed, "Really, the best looking of all. They couldn't see that then. Beauty obscured by oppression, worth denied by a society refusing to truly see Black women. This was the inheritance Walker transformed through fiction." Walker spent 20 years and 6 books before centering her grandmother's story. Her literary journey began with The Third Life of Grange Copeland, written at 22, reimagining her grandfather. An unwanted pregnancy brought suicidal thoughts before friends funded an illegal abortion, an experience of bodily violation that would inform her fiction. After graduation, Walker documented civil rights struggles in Mississippi with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, where she met Melvin Leventhal. They married in 1967, Mississippi's first legally married interracial couple, defying the state's strict color line. By 1980, Walker's ancestors had assumed the form of Celie, Shug, and Sophia. That spring in her Brooklyn living room, she began writing with her green pen. "You better never tell no one but God. It'd kill your mammy." By June 1981, she had completed the novel, then sold her house, left her job, and moved to a Boonville cottage with an apple orchard, a place where her characters felt safe enough to open up their entire world for her. When editor John Ferrone questioned Celie's vernacular in September 1981, Walker's response was fierce. Celie's speech was superior, and both title and epistolary structure were non-negotiable. This was political warfare over whose language deserves to be called literature. Standard English had been weaponized as proof of intelligence, while rural Black speech was dismissed as ignorant corruption. Walker confronted this erasure early. Disney's Song of the South left her feeling vast alienation, watching white appropriation strip Black stories of authentic voice. In Zora Neale Hurston's Their Eyes Were Watching God, she found a model for using rural Black speech as primary narrative voice. When Essence magazine rejected an excerpt, "Black people don't talk like that," Walker knew better. "Language more than anything else reveals and validates one's existence," she insisted. To sanitize Celie's voice would be to participate in her erasure. When The Color Purple won the Pulitzer in April 1983, making Walker the first Black woman to receive this honor, producer Quincy Jones immediately pursued the film rights. He brought Steven Spielberg to Walker's San Francisco home in February 1984. The 37-year-old director, known for blockbusters like Jaws, connected deeply with Seeley. His parents' divorce at 14 had shaped his storytelling, and he recognized emotional terrain he understood intimately. Walker seized this opportunity to make film history. To prevent another Gone with the Wind, she demanded that at least half the crew be women or Blacks or third world people. Danny Glover was cast as Albert, and Whoopi Goldberg, who had written Walker expressing interest in any role, even a Venetian blind, won Spielberg over with her stand-up routine. Yet production became painful. Walker's mother had suffered a major stroke, and Alice battled undiagnosed Lyme disease causing severe pain. Her illness made her miss subtle changes, including the diminishment of Shug's character and the reduction of Seeley and Shug's passionate relationship to a single kiss. Spielberg explained he limited their intimacy because anything more and the emphasis of the film would have shifted. Walker felt betrayed, lamenting, "The censor's knife scars the scene." At her December 1985 screening, she found the film slick, sanitized, and apolitical. Yet it became the first all-Black cast movie to gross over $100 million, proving audiences were hungry for these stories. Before filming began, the Coalition Against Black Exploitation warned the movie would push homosexuality as an attractive alternative to Black women's frustration with Black men. Minister Louis Farrakhan demanded its destruction, claiming it portrayed Black men as beasts. Black male critics led the charge against what they saw as an attack on Black masculinity. Yet Black women largely defended the film. Assemblywoman Maxine Waters called it one of the most beautiful and most powerful films she'd seen. Everyday Black women like artist Thomas insisted Black women should not be sacrificed for Black men's pride. Despite 11 Academy Award nominations, The Color Purple won nothing, losing to Out of Africa, a film embracing colonial fantasies. Walker later lamented that young Black men weren't encouraged to listen to Black women writers. "It is not Black men we want out of our lives, but violence." The controversy exposed deep fissures about whose stories deserved telling and whether airing community struggles publicly constituted betrayal or liberation. Oprah Winfrey's connection to The Color Purple transcends any role she's ever played. After discovering Walker's novel through a 1982 New York Times review, she bought copies for every Black woman she knew. "I opened the page and saw, 'Dear God, 14 years old, what's happening to me?' Being a girl who at 14 years old who had a baby, I was like, there's another human being with my story." Born to teenage parents in segregated Mississippi, Oprah endured brutal childhood trauma. Raped at 9 by a teenage cousin, the first of multiple assaults by male relatives. At 14, she gave birth prematurely to a baby who died shortly after. Despite battling the flu and ice-covered streets to audition, Oprah desperately wanted Sophia's role. After months of silence, casting director Ruben Cannon finally called, "If you lose a pound, you lose this part." Sophia's monologue, "All My Life I Had to Fight," became Oprah's anthem, delivered in a single take. "I was saying that line for myself and every woman who has ever been sexually assaulted, molested, raped by an uncle, a cousin, a brother. That's my story." 6 months after losing the Oscar, Oprah revealed on her talk show, "I was raped by a relative." This confession unleashed hundreds of similar stories. For 25 years, The Oprah Winfrey Show featured countless survivors, challenging the myth that strangers commit most rapes. Through Sophia, Oprah transformed trauma into mission. In December 2005, The Color Purple opened on Broadway after producer Scott Sanders spent a decade persuading Walker. Despite industry skepticism, a musical succeeded by expanding what Spielberg avoided: Seeley and Shug's intimacy and Albert's redemption, representing Walker's fuller vision. The production resonated powerfully with Black women, helping non-white theatergoers reach a record 17% in 2006. Groups traveled nationwide to witness Seeley's healing journey. A minimalist 2015 revival earned even greater acclaim. In July 2019, Walker purchased a cottage near her Georgia hometown, symbolically interrupting the cycle of economic exploitation and intergenerational trauma. At her 75th birthday celebration and the formerly segregated auditorium, she told the diverse crowd, "I'm so happy looking at all of us. It was all for this." The Color Purple's disruptive power endures, inspiring survivors and activists from Oprah to Tarana Burke's hashtag MeToo movement. The story resonates because it confronts uncomfortable truths while offering healing through community and love. As Walker wrote, "I think it pisses God off if you walk by the color purple in a field somewhere and don't notice it. Sometimes revolution means refusing to let beauty, truth, and dignity go unnoticed."